This week we've been having beans and squash at the garden, and they're the best I've ever tasted. And I said to my sister, you know, in the city you put a lot of spices and herbs on food, but you really don't need it. I don't think people even realize that. Food is so good out here. You don't need all that.
That's Edna Lewis, talking about the vegetables that her family grew in rural Virginia. And you know, she was always all about the goodness of country life, even though she moved away from the country as a teenager. She went to New York City, hung out with artists, made dresses for Marilyn Monroe, and became a chef. She cooked for regulars like Truman Capote and William Faulkner and Eleanor Roosevelt, and then, after a bad slip broke her leg, she became a writer. A writer who totally remade the image of Southern food in America. Her most famous book, The Taste of Country Cooking, came out in 1976, deep in the moment when the rest of America thought Southern food was just all fried chicken and greasy greens. And all of a sudden, here was this book about the South, but that talked about the good flavor of stewed quinces in winter, or stuffing squab for honored elders, or making biscuits with homemade baking powder so the flavor is pure butter and wheat, not metallic and chemical. It's a book about looking at a stream and seeing the water tug at the leaves of wild greens, about the community rituals of hog slaughter, and how even the seasons have their own seasons, how the absolute best fried chicken is made once a year, when the chickens are just fat enough when spring becomes summer. It's a book that's about paying attention and eating close to the earth. And it inspired Alice Waters, you know, the queen of eating local, who actually once told me that she didn't really know that America had a cuisine to be proud of until she read Edna Lewis. So Miss Lewis helped change the image of Southern food, helped launch the farm-to-table movement, and she did it by writing about a tiny place in central Virginia called Freetown. As she wrote, it wasn't really a town. It was just a little village built by her grandparents as soon as they came out of slavery. It was a place where they lived full of grace and good food. So think about that. Her book came out in the same year as Roots by Alex Haley. And while that book was making America look at the pain of slavery, Miss Lewis's writing said, "See what we made for ourselves." Miss Lewis died in 2006, but her life and her work still inspire us. So we dedicate this hour to her, talking to people who were inspired by her, people who cooked with her, people who lived with her. Edna Lewis was a chef, an author, a farmer, an activist, but first we'll start just with her as a person. And for that, we're joined by her niece, Nina Williams Mbenge. Hey Nina, it's great to have you.
Good morning, Francis. How are you? This is fantastic.
Well, thank you. And I am so happy to get to talk with you about your aunt. So, you know, she's this legendary figure for so many of us in the food world. But how do you remember her as your aunt? What do you think of when you think of her?
Oh, boy. I remember spending a lot of time with Aunt Edna. She was my mother's older sister. She was very funny. Her and my mom together were always laughing and joking about something. Oh, God. I remember her first cookbook before The Taste of Country Cooking, the Edna Lewis cookbook. She wrote with Evangeline Peterson.
Yeah.
Who was a woman that she cooked for. And, oh, my God, they were working on the book. And I'd be tagging along with Aunt Edna. She always had me going somewhere because my mom was working two or three jobs. And Edna was doing this catering. So I went to some of these things with her. But I remember she and Evangeline would get together. And I don't remember if they were drinking wine or Jack Daniels. But they would just start giggling. And both of their voices would get higher and higher each glass. And, of course, I'm like 11 or 12 going, oh, my God, what are they talking about? But I just have never forgotten the sounds of their laughter, just tinkling in their voices. Oh, it would go on and on, you know. And she was very shy. So when you'd see her out, you know, at these events or, you know, cooking or something, she, you know, it was hard for her to, you know, necessarily get her voice going. But certainly at home, you know, we watched TV, you know. She loved watching the Kentucky Derby. We'd watch that, all three of the races. She was a news hound. You know, Meet the Press, all the news programs in my family to this day. Everything stops while that stuff is on TV. So, you know, she was interested in everything I was doing. She was interested in young people, you know, my schooling. And, I remember her laughter a lot. And when the sisters would get together, Ruth and Jenny and Naomi and Aunt Edna, they would just carry on. Mm-hmm. One of my fondest memories is being in Virginia at Aunt Jen's house, who lived down in the country near Freetown.
Yeah.
And her and Aunt Edna and I, we'd go picking blackberries, and I'd trail along behind them, and they were gossiping and talking about the old folks. I just loved being with them.
What was Freetown like when you went there?
Well, by that time, there were no longer any houses there. It was a cattle field, really. My uncle, their brother, had his cattle there. So I just remember Aunt Edna always talking about Freetown and the people of Freetown and how much that meant to her and how she always felt their, you know, their presence. Aunt Edna's grandparents had been born in slavery and they lived till their 90s.
Right.
So she was, I think, 10, 12 years old before they passed away. And one of those grandparents taught her to cook. So she talked a lot about what life was like for them, you know, in the South, in a you know, a town of people that were formerly in slavery. That was amazing to me that I'm still alive and I, you know, was raised by someone who was raised by a former slave.
So Freetown was the, you know, the first line of Miss Lewis's book is, I grew up in Freetown. It wasn't really a town. And it was this little community her grandparents and other friends and family had founded, like a small village, right?
Yes. I was just going to say, it's just amazing to me that we're, you know, 2018, we're talking about Freetown. And I just think those families in there, they would just be amazed that Aunt Edna wrote about them in her book, and people that cook and are into American cooking or Southern cooking are talking about Freetown, too.
So when she wrote that book, she wrote it longhand. Sort of famously, she had these yellow legal pads.
Yeah,
and she
wrote I remember those. Yeah.
But you actually helped her with it, right? How'd you get pressed into service?
I was about 12. I think I had a typing class in seventh grade or something. I had my first typewriter. And she had me type the manuscript because her writing was kind of chicken scratch. So it was hard to read. And I remember just, you know, days and days typing that up. And I was always like, you know, I was, you know, correcting her grammar. And she had these long lists, you know, peas and watercress, and when she was describing everything. And I'm like, Aunt Edna, you got too many words in this one sentence. The whole page is one sentence. You can't do that. And I was trying to break it up for her, you know. So some of those things I remember because I just typed them over and over again. And I tell you, I missed that. I'd give anything to see her chicken scratch again. never knowing that, it, you know, she'd have such an influence on cooking and all this farm-to-table movement and all that.
Did you get a sense of what her, like, what she wanted to do with the book? Like, what was she hoping for? Like, I read it, I think a lot of people read it, not just as a cookbook, but, you know, as literature that tells the story of this community, Freetown, and tells the way they lived. And what motivated her when she was writing it?
I really think, I mean, she didn't necessarily talk about that to me, but I got the sense of the way that she talks about the people of Freetown. The people of Freetown motivated her. I got the sense that she really sensed the presence of all of her ancestors, you know, watching her and following her and seeing what she was doing. I think that that really drove her. I think she never forgot that. I mean, she never forgot how food tasted when she grew up, you know, fresh out of the fields. She never forgot walking along behind her father as he plowed the fields, getting ready to plant, you know, and behind her mother and all the things that happened, all the celebrations they had. And I think that's why she wrote the book the way that she did. You know, she wrote it according to the seasons and the things that people would do. And, you know, one thing about her long lists of things in her book, you know, she painted a picture, I think, of what she remembered and what she saw as a child.
I remember when I was researching a little bit about her life, it was so amazing to me that, you know, she wrote this incredible classic that's almost like a journal of life and what living was like in this community of Freetown.
Right.
And it's, like you said, it's such detail. And then you realize she moved away when she was 15, 16 years old. So, like you said, all that stuff was so implanted in her memory.
Yes. But I think that drove her. I mean, Aunt Edna was always, you know, very politically astute. She was always, you know, she was involved in all kinds of movements, definitely the civil rights movement. And I think, again, that drove her. But, you know, I think she had the artistic side was her cooking. And that drove her. And I don't know that she really, you know, necessarily was thinking, I'm going to write this cookbook about our lifestyle and I'm going to make a statement. I think that that was just always in her. The cooking was such an important part of her life. But, you know, the politics and whatnot was too. And I think that, I guess, she ended up making a statement because she was, you know, talking about the lives of these people that had been through so much and really struggled to make a decent, normal life for themselves.
Yeah. But that it was not just we scratched and clawed our way to survival. It was.
Oh yeah, no. They made it beautiful. And I'm sure it was tough. Yeah. And probably because she was so young, you know, even as she listened to her grandparents, you know, as a young person, they probably buried as much of that as they could. She would have seen the end result of people coming out of slavery and surviving and building this little town. And just, it's just a testament to people putting things behind them and just going forward and looking forward. And I think it's so amazing. And I think there's lessons there. There must be thousands of free towns, and I think they have lessons for us today, and you know they will into the future, for how people can come through, you know, God knows what, right, and still make a life and survive and reach out and touch people.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Nina. It's always a pleasure talking with you.
Great talking to you too.
Nina Williams Mbenge runs the Child Welfare Project at the National Conference of State Legislatures and, of course, is the niece of Edna Lewis. And her talking about picking berries with her aunts in Freetown made us think of this great simple recipe from Miss Lewis for sugared raspberries. It's like a fresh, raw jam, and you can find that recipe at splendidtable.org.